It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
We all have either said or heard somebody say, I want to be in showbiz. I mean, please, I grew up in Los Angeles where everyone, except me, it seemed, wanted to be in it. Of course, I had to be the one who wanted to be a TV reporter outside the crack house in sub-zero temperatures at 2 a.m. with a microphone waiting for the suspect to be held out. But of course, that's just me. You know, when you say showbiz, that is a very broad spectrum. Actors, actresses, stage actors, producers, screenwriters, comedy writers, comics. And if you really want to drill down into which of those is perhaps the most difficult, you could argue stand-up comedy might just be the one. I mean, think about it. Standing on a stage before a live crowd, trying to make an audience laugh when pretty much everyone out there is ready to heckle you, stay silent, or worse of all, walk out. I mean, that takes nerves of steel. I hope you remember I had Caroline Hirsch of Caroline's Comedy Clubs on the podcast. It's a couple of years ago. She discovered Jerry Seinfeld, Ellen DeGeneres, Paul Rubens, Sarah Silverman, Louis C.K., just to name a few. And she said, not all, but many comics have a very poignant backstory, maybe a rough childhood, major health issues, loneliness. But they had this gift of turning tragedy into comedy and eventually into incredible success. My guest today is a perfect example. Growing up poor in small-town Louisiana, Josh Johnson was, a victim of racism. He had to live with his grandparents after his mother needed brain surgery to remove a tumor, which required a very long recovery. It wasn't until 2016, after moving to Chicago, that Josh was asked to become a writer for late-night TV. But that year, he also had a whole bunch of other life news that he had to work his way through. So how did he now become one of the top funniest comics around and has won multiple awards? Let's find out. We welcome Josh Johnson to Everyone Talks to Liz. Good to have you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I mean, look, growing up in Louisiana, I can imagine there's a lot of material coming from that. And somebody said, that's so cool, Louisiana. What was it like? When people say that, what is your response?
I think that they would be underwhelmed at how much actual material or life is going on in some parts of Louisiana. You go to New Orleans, and obviously that's top of mind. The first thing on people's, tongues whenever you mention Louisiana is New Orleans, but I grew up in Alexandria, so it is much less exciting and way more, I guess you could say that way more, there's just a level of rough stuff that's happening in New Orleans, but especially in Alexandria without the added benefit of like a rich cultural history or tourism that brings people in to come see it. It's mostly just if you took some of the most dangerous parts about New Orleans and gave them very few redeeming factors.
Well, dangerous areas usually don't have redeeming factors. And that's the thing. I mean, that you're growing up in kind of a smaller area. I mean, Alexandria is a city in Louisiana, certainly. But, what was your childhood like as you're growing up there? When did you realize that you kind of were funny?
I would make my friends laugh. And every once in a while, I'd say something that made an adult laugh because maybe it was it felt a little bit like, has he already know what that is? Or a little bit of ahead of my time. Or maybe they thought that I was reaching for something that I didn't quite understand. So I always felt funny in those ways. But as far as feeling funny, I don't know if I felt funny enough to do comedy for a living, when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I more just felt, I don't know how to describe this, but, you mentioned even how some people learn comedy and find their path through loneliness. And I definitely struggle with that quite a bit. That was a big theme of growing up was, you know, I'm an only child and I had some friends growing up and everything, but the ability to see them or hang out with them or something was sometimes sparse. And then I would just be left with me to my thoughts and everything. And I wasn't great socially either. So then it's like you take being an only child and awkward on top of not having that many opportunities to hang out with or, like get to know a lot of other kids and in a deep way. Mm-hmm, and sure. You know, that kind of leads to a downward spiral of awkwardness, to be honest with you. Like even looking back, I feel like there were some interactions where I was like, oh yes, I would have also not hung out with me in this moment.
Well, you talk about in one of your most widely watched YouTube performances, which I found just unbelievably hilarious, catfishing the KKK. You talked about growing up with basically a computer. You know, you had a home computer. You were a latchkey kid in many cases. And you used to strike up conversations with strangers on Craigslist, which is interesting in and of itself. And you would have fun mimicking what people wanted you to be kind of anonymously online. And one day you see this ad that says, join the KKK. You as a young African-American child at that point, that turned into an unbelievably successful story that you then had as one of your comic bits.
Oh, in my head, I was like, I think, especially for what the internet was back then, there was so much deep anonymity. You know what I mean? There's just a thing of like, oh, no one's ever, like nothing will come of this, if that makes sense. And so I was just like, okay, this can't be real. You know, like the first time I saw it, I was like, no, this is clearly a joke. They're a terrorist organization. And then as I was like, you know, talking to people or like in interacting in any way, I was like, oh my God, this is real. And then it became like, I think it also comes from being very young. You don't really see yourself as in danger ever. Because when you're young, you think you're going to live forever, no matter what you do. So I think that's mainly what was crossing my mind initially when I saw it, was just like, oh, this is another person trolling, maybe.
You trolled. You found some guy named Dale who was a member of the KKK. How long did you string him along? Where it's just so fascinating to me because here you were a kid with a computer and you got him to show up to, quote, meet you on multiple occasions by pretending you were an adult who hated black people.
Yeah, I feel like this was like weeks and weeks. I'm trying to remember exactly how long it was because it's all like such a blur. But it was definitely like weeks and weeks. It wasn't like just a series of days or anything. It was to the point where sometimes I forgot I was doing it, if that makes sense. Like I would just go have a day, like completely separate from all this. So that's another reason why I was like, oh yeah, that went on longer than I initially thought when I thought back to it.
And he never found you, obviously. I mean, you kept making him go to all different locations. Hey, I'll be there tomorrow. But the story actually turned into this YouTube performance, which has been seen more than 12 million times. So it really resonated with people. But I started to look at some of the comments after that, and it was interesting how people described you. They described you as a very calm and natural comic, not one of these people who's always going for the knee slapping, you know, punchline kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I go back and forth because every once in a while I'm appreciative of people that whatever I'm saying or doing is finding its audience and resonating with people. But then there's another part of me that I'm like, but it wouldn't hurt to spice things up once in a while and maybe maybe a bit quicker to the punch, you know. It's like
one commenter wrote,
like to say stage, but
one commenter wrote, you have to be a great comedian to take something as troubling as a Klan rally and make it hilarious. This guy has it. What would you describe as your comedic style?
I think it's a, you know, a sort of aim towards storytelling, but with always a nod towards observation. You know, everything that I talk about in my stories, that I talk about from my life, or just things that I've witnessed and everything, I don't bring it up unless I have a distinct take on it. I mean, that's what every comedian should do. That's the whole reason you go to see comedians, is to get a glimpse of their perspective. But for the most part, I only really delve in things that I think have some basis in a universal notion. And I think that you get that through story. I think that, you know, story is one of the oldest connections that we have as people. You know, anything that you were not there for that someone tells you about is a story. And we've been telling stories longer than we've had, you know, written language. So I think that through telling other people stories from my life, and through sharing my observation, it both gives perspective and it hopefully resonates in that.
Yeah.
If you can feel connected to me, you know, you can feel connected to someone else.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/claimant. Just go to Indeed.com/claimant right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/claimant. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You went to college and you majored in lighting design. And after college, you moved to Chicago. Why? What was it about Chicago that was so alluring to you?
I think it's mainly because Chicago's like the only, at least to my knowledge, like it's the only secondary market in the U.S. It's the only market that is as big as it is, but is not this primary market of New York or L.A., but it's also somehow entertainment-wise and talent-wise bigger than some of the other tertiary markets that are got great crops of talent, are great places to hone your skills and learn from people. But Chicago is in this nice middle section where you could actually become a really big deal in Chicago without the pressures of it immediately having to turn into something.
Well,
so
Did you have a game plan?
Why.
I mean, you get there. Did you have any bookings? What got you through the lean moments there?
Yeah, I probably just the general delusion of youth. I think like honestly, you know, I didn't move there with anything. I didn't have a job. I had saved up money for maybe 2 years to move with. And even with the money that I had from those 2 years, it was still like going to be a tight squeeze to make it stretch long enough for me to get on my feet. And so I think in those, like you said, those sort of lean moments, I took solace in the fact that I was having more fun than I've ever had. I was finally around comedians. I had finally started doing comedy. I was watching people that were absolutely incredible that if anything, you know, obviously anytime someone has success, there are people that come out of the woodwork to be like, I always knew and everything. But I do think that I really do believe it because I remember the feeling I had when I watched them. And there were people that I watched when I moved to Chicago where I was like, this person is really good. This person is incredible. And, you know, it's like a privilege to call these people peers now, but just watching them, maybe they were 3 more years in than me. Maybe they were 5 more years in. I have no idea. But like, I would see them in Chicago and then they moved to New York and found success, or they moved to LA and they found success. And it's like that's the amount of success I always imagined them having. And I think that a genuine love for what I was doing and who I was becoming was also what helped, because, you know, I had the benefit in this like section of the climb, I had the benefit of not knowing any better. Mm-hmm. So then I had nothing to compare it to realize how bad of a situation I was in.
Well, how bad did it get, Josh? I mean, were you living in a tiny apartment? Were you hungry? I need to hear this because our listeners need to understand what people go through to reach their dreams.
No, I feel you. Okay. So a good example, my friends, when I moved to Chicago initially, were very kind, and they allowed me to stay on their couch for the first like 2 weeks just for free, because they knew me. Mm-hmm. And then I offered up, I was like, hey, you know, I have this money saved up, I'm still looking for a job. I moved there so naive that I really thought I'd be able to get a job as quickly as I got a job in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. But the job I got in Louisiana was just, I was like 16. I just got my worker's permit, and I just would go to restaurants like being like, do you need someone to work here? Mm-hmm. Like no resume or anything. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I'd be able to get a job. I'm like, this is a city, got, you know, 2 million people in it. I'll be able to get a job like that, you know? And then 2 weeks in, I'm still waiting to get some interviews. I'm still waiting to get some calls, you know, all this stuff. And I'm looking every day, but they were allowing me to stay on their couch for a split of the rent. So then I at least had somewhere to stay. But then I didn't have, you know, money coming in or anything. I remember one of the most poignant ones was, you know those door knocker like coupons that you get?
Yes.
Okay, so there was one of them that we got on our door for this new pizza place that had just opened. And it was going to be three medium-sized pizzas for $5 each. And so we all looked at each other and we were like, tonight we eat like kings. All right, there's three of us, that's three pizzas. Everybody got pizza to themselves. We're going to be living forever, right? We order the pizzas, sure enough, with tax and tip, it's like, you know, $20, right? Mm-hmm. So we're like, oh man, we are living, right?
Okay.
And sure enough, the pizza poisoned all of us. It was really bad. And the way that I knew I was poor is that I got so sick the next day, I knew it was the pizza, and I looked at my roommates. I was like, I'm gonna eat a little bit more and then I'm gonna throw it away, because this is bad. But in my head, it was worth one more roll of the dice, you know?
When did you get your first booking there to do stand up, and what was that like?
My first booking. Okay. So the first, I guess you could call it like, an official booking. I would do the open mic at the Laugh Factory mm-hmm. for a while, right? So I did it. The way it worked in Chicago, at least while I was there, is that you had to do the open mic three times. And then at the third time was when the owner would watch you. And then from the owner watching you, you would either get passed or you would get told, like, come back in a couple months or come back when you're a little bit better, or mm-hmm. or like, don't come back. I don't, like, you know, you would get your sort of verdict after that third one. And so it was a really big deal for him to be there, because you couldn't get past without him being there. Even if you had done the mic seven times, if he wasn't there to officially pass you, you couldn't get past. And so I remember I had done it the first time, did really well, did it the second time, did even better. And this is still early into comedy. Like, I'm, you know, like, what, 6 months in, maybe? So I'm doing well, but by the skin of my teeth each time, because it's not as if I'm a seasoned performer or anything, you
sure.
know? And so even when I'm bombing, I don't know what went wrong, because I don't know anything yet, you know? And so, you know, I get the call to come to the Laugh Factory, and that they were very kind. The staff really liked me. So they actually sent me an email specifically being like, hey, can you be here tonight? Because the owner is in town and he's watching people and I want him to watch you. And I was like, yes, I'm there. So I rush over, I do a set. He likes me. He likes what I'm doing. He likes my like taste in comedy, everything. We had a short conversation, and then I got my first booking that weekend after I got passed.
Wow.
So it was my first spot. And I remember it was like genuinely, genuinely electric. Like I cannot describe. It's one of those things. It's why I'm glad I don't do drugs, because it's the high you try to chase.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That doesn't really cost money or can get you arrested.
Yes. Yes. It's like, it's a very wholesome high. And I felt like it really didn't make all those weeks and months worth it. All of the, stuff when it came to like, will I get a job? Finally getting a job, the job not being quite conducive with comedy. So then I had the issue of like, okay, do I make myself poor by taking less hours just to do stand up at night? Or do I go ahead and miss out on building all these relationships faster by working as many hours as possible just to be comfortable, you know? So that was definitely a balance I had to strike that made it really, really tough.
Yeah.
Like to have those weeks where it's like, okay, if like I will go ahead and make enough money to make rent and to eat a little bit. And then the rest is going to just be doing as many spots as I can, trying to get booked on paid shows as well and everything. So all of that stuff was part of it. And I think the best thing that a person can do on the way up is to be really smart about your approach. Like sometimes you have people who take on needless hardship. And I think that, you know, while you don't want to shy away from what's difficult in the pursuit of what you want, you also want to give yourself every opportunity and every benefit possible to make sure that, you know, your personal climb, your career path isn't fraught with needless things that are in the way. You know,
your voice is so mellifluous. That's a compliment. Oh my God. I could just listen to you. This is so good. But I am sure you would get up there and in your early years, you bombed. What's your game plan when you start bombing up on stage?
I mean, thankfully there are fewer and farther between now, you know, but initially, It's hard to know what went wrong because you're saying the same words that the last group of people liked.
Ah.
So now you're like, well, the other people liked me, but they're not here now. And there's a whole group of other people who don't like you. So, you know, the main thing that I usually do if I'm ever in that situation is to sort of address it. I mean, when you are speaking to a group of people, whether you're doing comedy, whether you're giving a presentation, whether you're doing any form of public speaking, you are leading the ship. You're a captain. And if you look lost, now everyone is uncomfortable. But if you let them know, okay, we're going into choppy water, now everyone is more willing to come along with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The same way that a pilot comes on during the flight and he's like, there is about to be turbulence. I just want you to know, sitting in your seat, that I know what's happening. So when it starts shaking, that's not me messing up. I told you that was going to happen, and now it's happening.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back. You started getting a lot of attention. Comedy Central named you comic to watch in 2015. And then in 2016, you get the call from late night TV. They need a writer. Phone rings. You pick up. Mm-hmm. What do they say?
I mean, I think it was my agent and manager at the time that told me the news. And I still did not understand that I was going to be paid well.
Shock.
I genuinely was like, because by this point I moved to New York and I was working at a grocery store in Chicago, and I used that grocery store's branches to transfer. So I'm still working the same grocery store job as I was in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
And so in my head, I said it in my head and it didn't seem that dumb. So then I asked them, on the phone, and then everyone laughed at me. I was like, so should I quit my job or should I just go to Sundays? Like, should I, should I just do Sundays and then do this the rest of the week? And they were like, you will not need your, like, they could not get it through to me that I would not need this grocery store job anymore.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so great. Yeah. So you're writing for Late Night 2018. You get to perform at the New York Comedy Festival, and this unbelievable moment comes. They're announcing the winner of the award for New York's Funniest Comic, and they say your name.
Mm-hmm.
What went through your head?
I felt a little bit weird about it, because at the time I was talking to the other comics in the back, and then they said my name, and I didn't realize that they were saying the winner. So I thought I had, like, left something at the front. I genuinely was like, oh, the show must be over, and maybe I left my phone on stage or something. But then I heard people clapping, and I saw the host up there. I was like, oh my gosh, oh wow. And so then I get up there and receive it. And it is like a real moment of validation, because I think that for anything that you do, whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you are an artist, you have to be so self-reliant. You have to believe in a vision that you have for yourself.
Absolutely.
The entire way.
Yes.
And that can be really exhausting, because if you don't have any confirmations along the way, you could be like, you know, you and I both know people who are actually not good at something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But then they're willing to throw themselves at it. And it's like, okay, I appreciate the ambition, but you're also not
like
if a person's not equipped, you don't want them to waste their time.
Right. It's not going to work. But yet, even
yes.
if they believe, and we all believe, wait a minute, I can do this. Mm-hmm. You can almost will it to happen if you just persist.
Yeah. I think that through enough persistence and patience, you end up getting somewhere. And I think that that's why the moments of validation, while they shouldn't be the only thing that you look forward to and the only thing that you rely on to stay the course, I think that they are so helpful, because you do have to be so self-reliant that every once in a while, when you get a sort of pat on the back or you get some recognition that you're on the right path from people who are just, you know, visitors along the way,
right?
I think that that keeps you going. Mm-hmm. Really, really, like really earnestly, I think that you never know. I've had people message me before, and you never know what someone needs to hear. Like, the same way that the internet is full of so much negativity, I really do think that the people out there that just, even if it's just a kind word, even if it's just a moment off to yourself where you're like, I like this person and yeah. I appreciate them, and I'd like for them to see that.
To know that. Yeah.
Even if it is a sort of, you know, as simple as a comment under a video or something, you never know when someone will see something and how much they're going to need to hear it or see it when they see it.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that, because mm-hmm. I had a general manager at a station, my small market, Columbus, Ohio, and he said, pick one, maybe two voices whom you respect and tune everybody else out, because everybody wants to weigh in. Well, you could have been funnier about this, and you kind of stumbled, or you know, I didn't like that outfit. Let me just tell you something. That was among the best pieces of advice I ever got, because I stopped asking, well, what did you think of that? And I only spoke to the really smart people whom I respected. But to the point where you have the power, people should understand they have the power to really change the course of somebody's life with just a simple acknowledgement or compliment. Geraldo Rivera taught us that. You know, we've been in restaurants where the waiter will be serving and he'll say, you know what, you're really good. You're going places, kid. And he says it and you realize, oh my God, he just levitated that person who maybe was about to give up on whatever their dream was.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's what I'm hearing you say, that just along the way, a few comments of support from people help string you along.
Yeah, I think that the same way that you have to work the muscle – that is sort of self-belief in the mind and everything, I think you also need help every once in a while. All of us do, you know, and no matter what stage of your career or path that you have, you know, obviously you don't want to surround yourself with yes people and everything, but I do think that people that are genuine reaching out to you, even if it's a moment, or, you know, maybe it is an award, maybe you get some sort of award, or maybe there's some sort of recognition of your work that people appreciate it. I think that stuff really is powerful. You shouldn't let it dictate how you feel about yourself, but it's okay to take it for what it is, which is a nudge one way or the other on the path that you're on. Not getting an award sometimes is as important as getting it, you know?
Yeah. You know, I totally agree. Well, from eating rancid pizza on a friend's couch to today, where you are Comedy Central's most watched comedian ever with 40 million plus views to date across the platforms. Congratulations. You're touring now, right?
I am touring. Yes. Yes. So if you are in the States and you would like to see me doing stand-up, I'll give you a quick rundown of where I'm going to be and when, so that you can maybe come through and say hi. May 31st, I'm going to be in Houston, Texas. June 1st through the 3rd, I'm going to be in Austin, Texas. June 4th is Dallas. June 30th to July 1st, I'm going to be in Dayton, Ohio. November 16th, I'm going to be at Chicago, Illinois, coming back home at Talia Hall. And November 18th, I'm going to be at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York. And November 30th through December 2nd, I'm going to be in Arlington, Virginia. If you didn't catch any of those dates and you just want to go to the one that you heard when I said your city, go to joshjohnsoncomedy.com and you will be able to get tickets to all of these dates. You can also follow me on social, and I'm always posting about where I'm going to be. If there's a pop-up show, if anything exciting or fun is happening, I let you know on all the socials. So I'm on Josh Johnson Comedy on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
Oh, we wish you the best of luck. I am so happy to hear this story. Thank you so much, Josh.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I had a great time talking to you.
Great, great to have you. Josh Johnson, check him out. And all I can say is, you know, what you have just heard from him is really important. It's hard, but the payoff is so, so good when you finally succeed. You all can do it. Just listen to how Josh did it and how all our Everyone Talks to Liz guests do it. So thanks again for tuning in, and I will see you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Fox Business Network. And I will always end by saying, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. It's like we got this little club here, and I'm so glad you're a member of it. Have a good one. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.